Chapter 63. Zaylee. Majacite cuffs scald my skin, searing straight through my wrists and ankles. The black chains suspend me above the floor of my jail cell, making it impossible for me to cast an incantation. Sweat drips down my skin as another warm blast funnels through the vent. The heat must be intentional. Heat will make the coming pain worse. Live. Lacan's words echo, a taunt as I face my death. I told him it was a mistake. I told him. I told everyone. I begged them not to waste this chance on me. Now look what I've done. I laughed and spun and kissed as the king prepared our slaughter. Metal-soled boots clank outside. I flinch as they near my door. It would be easier if my cell had bars. At least then I could prepare myself. But they've locked me in an iron box. Only two burning torches keep me from being left in the dark. Whatever they plan to do, they intend to hide it even from the guards. I swallow hard, a feeble attempt to quench my dry mouth. You've done this before, I remind myself, more times than you can count. For a moment, I ponder whether Mama Agba's constant lashings weren't to punish, but to prepare. She beat me so often, I got good at taking it, good at loosening my body to minimize the aches. Could she sense that my life would end this way? Damn it. Tears sting my eyes at the shame of all the corpses I've left in my wake. Little BC, Lacan, Zuleika. Their sacrifice will never amount to anything. This is all my fault. We never should have stayed. Somehow we must have led the army to that camp. Without us, they might still be alive. Zu could have survived. My thoughts slow. Zane's glare flashes into my mind. My heart seizes at the thought. Could Inan have done this? No. My throat burns with the fear I choke back like bile. He wouldn't. After everything we've been through, he couldn't. If he wanted to betray me, he had countless opportunities. He could have made off with the scroll without taking all those innocent lives away. Amari's face overtakes Zane's, her amber eyes dripping with pity. Either he's about to betray us, or something else is taking place. Inan's smile breaks through their hate, the soft gaze he gave me before we kissed. But it blackens and twists and it burns until it wraps around my throat with the strength of his grip. No! I close my eyes, remembering the way he held me in his arms. He saved me, twice, and he tried to save me again. He didn't do this. He couldn't have. A clink sounds. The first lock outside my door opens. I brace myself for pain, holding on to the last good things I have left. At least Zane is alive. At least he and Amari survived. With Nyla's speed, they had to have gotten away. I have to focus on that. One thing turned out all right, and Baba... The threat of tears burns behind my eyes as I remember the crooked grin I prayed I would see once more. When he finds out about this, he'll never smile again. I close my eyes as the tears fall, stinging like tiny knives. I hope he's dead. I hope he never experiences that pain. The final lock unhinges, and the door groans open. I steel myself. But when Inan fills the entryway, my every defense breaks. My body jolts against the chains as the little prince walks in, flanked by two lieutenants. After days of seeing him in muted kaftans and borrowed dashikis, I forgot how cold he looks in a guard's uniform. No. I search him for any sign of the boy who promised me the world. The boy I almost gave up everything for. But his eyes are distant. Zane was right.
You liar!
My scream echoes in the cell. The words aren't enough. They can't cut the way I need them to, but I can barely think. I grip the metal chains so hard they rip through my skin. I need the pain to distract myself, otherwise nothing will stop my tears. Leave, Inan orders his lieutenants, looking at me as if I were nothing. Like I wasn't in his embrace just hours ago.
She's dangerous, Your Highness. We can't. That was an order, not a suggestion.
The guards exchange glances, but reluctantly leave the room. Guards know they can't defy a direct order from their precious prince. Clever. I shake my head. It's not hard to guess why Inan wants privacy. The white streak that shone so vibrantly in his hair hides under a new coat of black dye. Can't have anyone finding out the truth about their little prince. Was this his plan all along? I squeeze everything in me to keep my face even. He doesn't get to see my pain. He doesn't get to know how he's hurt me. The door swings shut, leaving us alone. He looks at me as we hear the sounds of the guards retreating. It's only when we can't hear them anymore that his hardened face crumbles into the boy I know. Inan's amber gaze fills with fear as he steps forward, eyes catching on the largest blood stain on my dress. A warm rush of air fills my lungs. I don't know when I stopped breathing. I don't know when I started needing him this much. I shake my head. It's not my blood, I whisper. Not yet. What happened? How did they find us?
The festival. Inan looks down. Diviners went into Gombe to get supplies. A few guards got suspicious and tailed them.
Gods. I bite back a new wave of tears that wants to come forth. Slaughtered for a celebration. One we never should have had.
Zale, we don't have much time, he rushes out, voice strained and hoarse. I couldn't get to you until now, but a military caravan just docked. Someone's coming, and when they do...
Inan turns back to the door, hearing something that isn't there.
Zane, I need you to tell me how to destroy the scroll.
What? There's no way I heard him correctly. After everything, he can't think that's the answer.
If you tell me how to destroy it, I can protect you. Father will kill you as long as the possibility of magic coming back is still a threat.
By the gods. He doesn't even realize we've already lost. The scroll means nothing without someone to read it. But I can't let him know that. They'll slaughter us all if they find out, erasing every man, woman, and child. They won't stop until we're gone, until they've wiped our existence from this world with their hate.
They're vicious, Zale.
Inan swallows hard, bringing me back to the present.
If you don't give it up, you won't survive.
Then I don't survive. Inan's face twists.
If you don't talk, they'll cut it out of you.
A lump forms in my throat. I guessed this much. I can't talk. So, I'll bleed.
Zale, please.
He steps forward, putting his hands on my bruised face.
I know we had our plans, but you have to realize everything's changed.
Of course everything's changed, I scream. Your father's men killed Zu, Salim, all those children.
I shake my head.
They couldn't even fight, and the guards murdered all of them.
Inan grimaces, face splitting with pain. His soldiers, his men, our undoing once again.
Zeli, I know. His voice breaks. I know. Every time I close my eyes, her body is all I can see.
I look away, fighting back fresh tears. Zu's bright smile fills my mind. Her endless joy, her light. We should have been halfway to Zaria by now. She and Kwame should still be alive.
They shouldn't have attacked, Inan whispers. Zuleika deserved a chance. But the soldiers thought you were using the scroll to create a Magi army. And after what Kwame did...
Inan's voice trails off.
All the grief that filled him before seems to shrink, overpowered by fear. Kwame took out 3 platoons in seconds, burned them alive. He incinerated that camp. We'd probably be dead if he hadn't burned out himself.
I rear back in disgust.
What in God's names is he talking about?
Kwame sacrificed himself to protect us.
But imagine how it looked to the guards, Inan speaks quickly. I know Kwame's intentions were pure, but he took it too far. For years we've been warned about magic like that. What Kwame did was worse than anything father's ever said.
I blink, searching Inan's face. Where is the future king who was ready to save the Magi? The prince who threw himself in front of flames to keep me safe? I don't know this boy, afraid, making excuses for everything he claimed to hate. Or maybe I know him too well. Maybe this is the truth, the broken little prince.
Make no mistake, the attack was an abomination. I know we'll have to deal with it, but right now we have to act. The soldiers are terrified a Magi like Kwame will attack again.
Good. I squeeze my chains to hide the tremor in my hands. Let them be afraid. Let them taste the terror they make us swallow.
Zeli, please, Inan grits his teeth. Don't choose this. We can still unite our people. Work with me, and I'll find a way for you to return to Lagos. We'll save Orisha with something safer, something without magic.
What's wrong with you?
My shout echoes against the walls.
There's nothing to save. After what they just did, there's nothing at all.
Inan stares at me, a flash of tears in his eyes.
You think I want this? You think after planning a new kingdom with you, I want this?
I see my own grief reflected in his eyes. The death of our dream. The future Orisha will never see.
I thought things could be different. I wanted them to be different. But after what we just saw, we have no choice. We can't give people that kind of power.
There's always a choice, I hiss. And your guards made theirs. If they were scared of magic before, they should be terrified now.
Zeli, don't add your body to the dead. That scroll is the only way I convinced them to keep you alive. If you don't tell us how to destroy it.
Another click sounds through the door. Inan steps back, just as it opens.
Did I say you couldn't?
His voice falters. The color drains from his face.
Father?
Inan's lips part in surprise. Even without his crown, it's impossible not to recognize the king. He enters like a storm, the air darkening in his presence. A wave of emotions hits me as the door swings shut. I forget how to breathe as I meet the soulless eyes of the man who murdered Mama.
Gods, help me.
I don't know if I'm in a dream or a nightmare. My skin heats with a rage like I've never known, yet my pulse thunders with fear. Since the early days after the raid, I've pictured this moment, imagined what it would be like to meet him face to face. I've orchestrated his death so many times in my mind, I could feel a tome detailing all the ways he should die. King Saran rests his hand on Inan's shoulder. His son flinches, as if waiting for a blow. Despite everything, the flash of terror in Inan's eyes pains me. I've seen him broken before, but this is a side of him I don't know.
The gods tell me you tracked her to the uprising.
Inan stands up straight and clenches his jaw.
Yes, sir. I'm in the middle of an interrogation. If you leave us, I'll get the answers we need.
Inan's voice stays so even, I almost believe the lie. He's trying to keep me away from his father. He must know I'm about to die. A shudder runs through me at the thought, but it's quickly met with an unearthly calm. The fear in Saran's presence is undeniable, yet it doesn't overwhelm my desire for vengeance. In this man, this one wretched man, is an entire kingdom, an entire nation of hate and oppression staring me in the face. It may have been the guards who broke down the doors in Ibadan that day, but they were simply his tools. Here lies the heart.
What of Admiral Kaya?
Saran lowers his voice.
Is this her killer?
Inan's eyes widen and drift to me. But when Saran follows his gaze, Inan realizes his mistake. No matter what he says now, he can't stop the King of Orisha from approaching me. Even in the sweltering room, Saran's very presence chills my blood. The burning in my skin intensifies as he nears with his Magicite blade. This close to him, I can make out the pockmarks in his deep brown skin, the grey hairs of old age speckled throughout his beard. I wait for the slurs, but there's something worse about the way he looks at me. Distant, removed, like I'm some beast dragged from the mud.
My son seems to think you know how the Admiral died.
Inan's eyes bulge. It's written all over his face. Someone died. His words from the festival come back to me. Someone I loved. But it wasn't just someone. It was Kaya.
I asked you a question.
Saran's voice breaks back in.
What happened to my admiral?
Your Magi's son killed her. Behind Saran, Inan jerks back, likely horrified at my thoughts. They're secrets I should scream to the world, secrets I should spill onto this floor. But something about Inan's terror makes it impossible for me to break. I look away instead, unable to stomach the monster who ordered Mama's death. If Inan's truly on my side, then when I die, the little prince might be the diviner's only hope. Saran's grip jerks my chin back to his face. My whole body flinches. The calm that sat in Saran's eyes before explodes with a violent rage.
You would do well to answer me, child.
And I would. I would do well, indeed. It would be perfect to have Saran find out here. Try to kill Inan himself. Then Inan would have no choice to attack back. Kill his father, take the throne, rid Orisha of Saran's hate.
Plotting, are we?
Saran asks.
Cooking up those precious incantations?
He digs into me so hard his nails draw blood from my chin.
Make any moves and I will personally rid your body of its wretched hands.
Father, Inan's voice is faint, but he forces himself forward. Saran glances back,
wrath still burning in his eyes, yet something about Inan reaches him. With a violent jerk, he releases my face. His lips curl as he wipes his fingers against his robe.
I suppose I should be angry with myself, he muses quietly. Pay attention, Inan. When I was your age, I thought the children of the maggots could live. I thought their blood needn't be spilled.
Saran grabs onto my chains, forcing me to meet his eyes.
After the raid, you should have been desperate to keep magic away. You were supposed to be afraid, obedient. Now I see there is no educating your kind. You maggots all crave the disease tainting your blood.
You could have taken magic away without killing us, without beating our bodies into the ground.
He jumps as I pull against my chains, wild like a rabid lioner. I itch to unleash magic fueled by the blackest part of my rage, a rage born because of everything he took away. A new searing burns my flesh as I fight the Magicite, doing everything I can to call forth my magic despite the power of the black chains. Smoke sizzles from my skin as I fight in vain. Saran's eyes narrow, but I can't be silent. Not when my blood boils and my muscles shake to break free. I will not let my fear silence the truth.
You crushed us to build your monarchy on the backs of our blood and bone. Your mistake wasn't keeping us alive. It was thinking we'd never fight back.
Inan steps forward, jaw taut, eyes traveling back and forth between us. The fury in Saran's gaze flares as he lets out a long, low chuckle.
You know what intrigues me about your kind. You always start in the middle of the story. As if my father didn't fight for your rights. As if you maggots didn't burn my family alive.
You can't enslave an entire people for the rebellion of a few.
Saran bares his teeth.
You can't do whatever you want when you're the king.
Your ignorance will be your downfall.
I spit in Saran's face.
Magic or not, we won't give up. Magic or not, we will take back what is ours.
Saran's lips curl back in a snarl.
Brave words for a maggot about to die. Maggot.
Like Mama. Like every brother and sister slaughtered by his command. You'd be wise to kill me now, I whisper, because you're not getting any of the artifacts. Saran smiles, slow and sinister, like a jungle cat.
Oh, child, he laughs. I wouldn't be so sure of that.
Chapter 64 Inan. The walls of the cellar close in. I'm trapped in this hell. It takes everything in me to stand, not to buckle under Father's glare. But while I can barely breathe, Zeli rises, defiant and fiery as ever. No regard for her life, no fear for her death. Stop, I want to scream over her. Don't talk. With each word, Father's desire to break her grows. He pounds against the door. With two sharp knocks, the metal door flies open. The fortress physician walks in, flanked by three lieutenants. All fix their gazes on the floor. What's going on? My voice comes out hoarse. It's hard to speak through the strain of suppressing my magic once more. Sweat pours down my skin as another blast of heated air funnels through the vent. The physician glances at me.
Does your highness...
You're under my orders,
Father interrupts.
Not his.
The physician scurries forward, drawing a sharp knife from his pocket. I stifle a cry as he slices into Zaylee's neck.
What are you doing?
I yell. Zaylee grits her teeth as the physician digs with his blade.
Stop!
I shout in panic. Not now. Not here. I start forward, but Father presses his hand into my shoulder so hard I nearly stumble. I watch in horror as the physician cuts a shallow X into Zaylee's neck. With an unsteady hand, he pushes a thick, hollowed-out needle into the exposed vein. Zaylee tries to jerk her head back, but a lieutenant holds it still. The physician removes a small vial of black liquid and prepares to pour the serum down the needle.
Father, is this wise?
I turn to him.
She knows things. There are more artifacts. She can find them. She's the only person who understands the scroll. Enough!
Father's grip on my shoulder tightens until it aches. I'm angering him now. If I keep going, he'll only cause Zaylee more pain. The physician looks back at me as if looking for a reason to stop. But when Father pounds his fist against the wall, the physician pours the serum through an opening in the hollow needle, feeding it straight into her vein. Zaylee's body jerks and spasms. The serum releases under her skin. Her breaths go short and rapid. Her pupils grow large and dilated. My own chest tightens as blood pounds inside my head, and it's only an echo of what they're doing to her.
Don't worry, Father speaks, mistaking my grief for disappointment. One way or another, she'll tell us what she knows.
Zaylee's muscles seize, rattling the chains. I press against the wall as my own thighs shake. I struggle to keep my voice even. Keeping calm is my only chance of saving her.
What did you give her? Something to keep our little maggot awake.
Father smiles.
Can't have her passing out before we get what we need.
A lieutenant slides a dagger from his belt. Another rips Zaylee's dress, exposing the smooth skin of her back. The soldier holds the blade in the heat of the torch flames. The metal warms, smoldering red. Father steps forward. Zaylee's spasms intensify, so violent the two other lieutenants have to hold her down.
I admire your defiance, child. It's impressive you've made it this far. But I wouldn't be doing my job as king if I didn't remind you what you are.
The knife sears into her skin with a fury so intense her agony leaks into me.
Ah!
A blood-curdling scream rips from Zaylee's throat, rips straight through my being.
No!
I cry out and run forward, plunging straight for the lieutenant. I knock one of the guards holding Zaylee back. I kick the other in the gut. My fist collides with the lieutenant carving into her back, but before I can do more, Father shouts,
"Restrain him!"
Instantly, two guards latch onto my arms. The entire world blazes in white. The scent of burning flesh fills my nose.
I knew you wouldn't have the stomach for this.
Somehow, Father's disappointment cuts through the sound of Zaylee's shrieks.
Remove him,
he snaps.
Now!
I feel Father's command more than I hear it. Though I struggle forward, I'm pushed back. All the while, Zaylee's screams grow. She only gets farther and farther away. Her sobs and screams bounce against the metal walls. As her singed flesh cools, I make out the shape of an M. And when Zaylee's breathing grows shallow, the lieutenant starts on the A.
No!
They throw me into the hallway. The door slams shut.
I pound so hard my knuckles split and bleed, but no one comes out. Think! I ram my head against the door, blood pounding as her screams grow. I can't get in. I need to get her out.
I race along the corridor, but the distance does nothing to break the anguish. Concerned faces flash as I stumble past. Lips move. People speak. I can't make out their sounds over Zaylee's screams. Her shrieks ring through the door. They screech even louder in my head. I crash into the nearest washroom and slam the door. Somehow I latch the lock. I can sense they've started on the G now. It's as if the curve is etched into my own back. Ah! I grasp the porcelain sink's rim with shaking hands. Everything in me comes out. My throat stings from the burn of vomit. The world spins around me, violent and thrashing. It's all I can do not to pass out. I have to power through. I need to get Zaylee out. I wheeze. Cool air hits me, like a brick to the face. It pulls the scent of wet grass into my lungs. Wilted reeds tickle my feet. The dreamscape. The realization brings me to my knees. But I have no time to waste. I have to save her. I need to bring her to this place. I close my eyes and picture her face. The haunting silver of her eyes. What new letter have they carved into her back? Her heart. Her soul. Within seconds, Zaylee appears. Gasping. Half naked. Her hands grip the earth. Her eyes hang empty in her head. She stares at her shaking fingers with no recognition of where she is. Who she is. Zaylee? Something's missing. It takes me a second to realize what's wrong. Her spirit doesn't surge like the ocean tides. The sea salt scent of her soul is gone. Zale. The world seems to shrink around us, pulling in the blurred white borders. She's still. So still I don't know if she's heard me or not. I reach out. When my fingers graze her skin, she shrieks and scrambles back. Zale. Her eyes flash something feral. Her trembling intensifies. When I move toward her, she crawls back, shattered, broken. I stop and put my hands up. My chest aches at the sight. There's no sign of the warrior I know, the fighter who spit in father's face. I don't see Zale at all, only the shell father left behind. You're safe, I whisper. No one can hurt you here. But her eyes fill with tears. I can't feel it, she cries. I can't feel anything. Feel what? I move toward her, but she shakes her head and pushes herself back through the reeds with her feet. It's gone, she says the same words again. Gone. She curls into the reeds, writhing with the pain she can't escape. Duty before self. I dig my fingers into the dirt. Father's voice rings loud in my head. Duty above all else. Kwame's flames come back to life behind my eyes, blazing through everything in their path. My duty is to prevent that. My duty has to be keeping Orisha alive. But the creed rings hollow, carving a hole inside me like the knife that carved through Zaylee's back. Duty isn't enough when it means destroying the girl I love. Chapter 65. Amari.
This will work. By the skies, this has to work. I hold on to this flickering hope as Zane and I slip down the alleys between the rusted structures of Gombe, blending into the shadows and darkness. A city of iron and foundry, Gombe's factories run late into the night. Erected by welders before the raid, metal structures rise and bend in impossible shapes. Unlike the tiers dividing the classes of Lagos, Gombe is split into four quadrants, partitioning residential life from its iron exports. Through the dust-covered windows, diviners work, forging Orishan goods for the next day.
Wait.
Zane holds me back as a patrol of armored guards clunk by.
Okay,
he whispers when they pass, but his voice lacks its usual determination. This will work, I repeat in my head, wishing I could convince Zane as well. When this is over, Zaylee will be all right. With time, the streets of cluttered, cramped mills transform into the towering iron domes of the downtown district. As bells ring, released workers swarm us, each covered in dust and ferrous metal burns. We follow the swell toward the music and drums pumping into the night. As the aroma of liquor replaces the stench of smoke, a cluster of bars appears, each nestled under a small, rusted dome. Will he be here? I ask as we walk up to a particularly shoddy structure that hums quieter than the rest.
It's the best place to look. When I was in Gombe last year for the Orishan Games, Kenyon and his team took me here every night.
Good. I muster a smile for Zane's sake. That's all we need.
Don't be so sure. Even if we find him, I doubt he'll want to help.
He's a diviner. He won't have a choice.
Diviners rarely have choices.
Zane wraps his knuckles against the metal door.
When they do, they usually choose to look after themselves.
Before I can respond, a slit in the door slides open. A gruff voice barks out.
Password. Loish. That's old.
Oh. Zane pauses, as if the right word might appear out of thin air.
That's the only one I know.
The man shrugs.
Password changes every quarter moon.
I push Zane aside and climb onto my tiptoes, straining to reach the slit. We do not live in Gombe, sir. Please, help us. The man narrows his eyes and spits through the slit. I recoil in disgust.
No one gets in without a password,
he seethes.
Especially not some noble.
Sir, please. Zane moves me aside.
If Kenyon's in there, can you let him know I'm here? Zane Adebola. From Ilorin?
The slit slams shut. I stare at the metal door in dismay. If we don't get inside, Zaylee's as good as gone. Is there another way in? I ask.
No, Zane groans. This was never going to work. We were wasting time. While we stand here, Zale's probably dead.
His voice catches, and he closes his eyes, stealing everything inside. I unfold his clenched fists and reach for his face, placing my hands on his cheeks. Zane, trust me. I will not let you down. If Kenyon isn't here, we can find someone else.
Gods!
The door swings open, and a large diviner appears, dark arms covered in sleeves of ornate tattoos.
I guess I owe Kani a gold piece.
His white hair clumps in long, tight locks, all piled atop a bun on his head. He wraps his arms around Zane, somehow eclipsing his massive frame.
Man, what are you doing here? I'm not supposed to beat your team for 2 weeks.
Zane forces a laugh.
It's your team I'm worried about. Heard you twisted your knee?
Kenyon pulls up the leg of his pants, revealing a metal brace anchored around his thigh.
Doctor says it'll heal before qualifiers, but I'm not worried. I could take you in my sleep.
His eyes move to me, slow and indulging.
Please tell me your pretty little thing like you didn't come here just to see Zane lose.
Zane shoves Kenyon and he laughs, sliding his arm around Zane's neck. It amazes me that Kenyon can't sense the desperation Zane holds back.
He's good, Dee.
Kenyon turns to the bar's guard.
Promise, I can vouch for him.
The owner of the gruff voice peeks around the door. Though he appears to be only in his 20s, his face is marked with scars.
Even the girl?
He nods at me. Zane slides his hand over mine.
She's fine, Zane vouches for me. Won't say a word.
Dee hesitates but steps back, allowing Kenyon to lead us inside. Though he makes sure to glare at me until I disappear from his sight. The thud of drums reverberates through my skin as we enter the ill-lit bar. The dome is packed, and the patrons are young. No one looks much older than Kenyon or Zane. Everyone shrinks in and out of shadows, shrouded by weak, flickering candlelight. Its glow illuminates the chipping paint and patches of rust marring the walls. In the back corner, two men pound a soft beat on the canvas of their ashiko drums, while another hits the wooden keys of a balafon. They play with a practiced ease, filling the iron walls with their lively sound. What is this place? I whisper in Zane's ear. Though I have never stepped foot in a bar, I soon realize why this one requires a password. Among all the patrons, almost everyone's hair shines white, creating a sea overflowing with diviners. The few Kosidan who made it inside are all visibly linked to the diviners who belong. The various couples sit hand in hand, sharing kisses, closing the space between their hips.
It's called a toju, Zane responds. Diviners started them a few years ago. They have them in most cities. It's one of the only places diviners can go to gather in peace.
Suddenly, the doorman's animosity doesn't feel as misplaced. I can only imagine how quickly the guards could dispatch a gathering like this.
I've played against these guys for years, Zane whispers as Kenyon leads us toward a table in the back. They're loyal, but they're guarded. Let me do the talking. I'll ease them in.
We don't have time for easing, I whisper back. If we don't get them to fight...
There won't be a fight if I can't convince them to say yes.
Zane gives me a gentle nudge.
I know we're tight on time, but with them, we need to take it slow.
Zane!
A chorus of excitement erupts when we reach a table with the four diviners I can only assume complete Kenyon's Agbon team. Each player is bigger than the last. Even the twin girls Zane calls Imani and Kani almost match his height. Zane's presence incites smiles and laughter. Everyone rises, slapping his hand, patting his back, teasing Zane about the coming Agbon tournament. Zane's instructions to take it slow buzz in my mind, but his friends are so consumed with games, they do not even realize Zane's world is falling apart. We need your help, I break through the noise. The first sentence I manage to get in. The team pauses to stare at me, as if noticing me for the first time. Kenyon sips on his bright orange drink and turns to Zane.
Talk. What do you need?
They sit in silence as Zane explains our precarious situation, hushed when they hear about the fall of the Diviner settlement. He tells them everything, from the origin of the scroll to the impending ritual, ending with Zaylee's capture. The solstice is in 2 days, I add. If we're going to make it, we need to act fast.
Damn,
Ife sighs, his shaved head reflecting the candlelight.
I'm sorry, but if she's in there, there's no getting her out. There has to be something we can do.
Zane points to Femi, a broad diviner with a cropped beard.
Can't your father help? Isn't he still bribing the guards?
Femi's face darkens. Without a word, he jerks back, rising so fast he almost knocks over the table.
They took his father a few moons ago. Connie drops her voice. It started as a tax mix-up, but
3 days later, they found his body. Imani finishes. Skies. I stare after Femi as he makes his way through the crowd. Another victim of father's power. One more reason we must act now. Zane's face falls. He reaches out and grips someone's metal cup so hard it dents under his touch.
It's not over, I speak up. If we can't bribe our way in, we can break her out.
Kenyon snorts and takes another long swig of his drink.
We are big, not dumb.
How is this dumb? I ask. You don't need your size. You just need your magic.
At magic, the whole table freezes, as if I've hissed a hurtful slur. Everyone turns to look at one another, but Kenyon fixes a sharp glare on me.
We don't have magic.
Not yet. I pull out the scroll from my pack. But we can give you your powers back. The fortress was designed to hold back men, not magi. I expect at least one of them to take a closer look, but everyone stares at the scroll as if it's a fuse about to blow. Kenyon backs up from the table.
It's time for you to go.
In an instant, Imani and Kani rise, each gripping one of my arms.
Hey!
Zane yells. He struggles as Ife and Kenyon hold him back.
Let go!
The bar stops, not wanting to miss out on the entertainment. Though I kick and shout, the girls do not relent, instead rushing to the doors as if their very lives depend on it. But as Imani's breath comes out in short rasps and Kani's grip on me tightens, the realization sinks in. They are not angry. They are afraid. I twist out of their grasp with a maneuver Inan taught me moons ago. I grab the hilt of my sword, releasing the blade with a sharp flick. I am not here to hurt you. I keep my voice low. My only desire is to bring your magic back.
Who the hell are you?
Imani asks. Zane finally breaks free of Kenyon's and Ife's grasp. He pushes through Diviner's and the twins to get to my side.
She's with me.
He forces Imani to back up.
That's all you need to know.
It's all right. I step out of Zane's shadow, leaving the circle of his protection. Every eye in the bar pierces through me. But for once, I do not shrink away. I picture Mother before a crowd of Oloyes, able to command a room with just the slightest arch of her brow. I must call on that power now. I am Princess Amari, daughter of King Saran, and though the words have never left my lips, I now realize there is no other choice. I cannot let the line of succession stand in my way. And I am the future queen of Orisha. Zane's brows knit in surprise, but he doesn't let himself rest in his shock for too long. The bar erupts in an unyielding chatter that takes forever to quiet down. Eventually, he manages to silence the crowd.
11 years ago, my father took your magic away. If we don't act now, we'll lose the only chance we will ever have to bring it back.
I look around the Toju, waiting for someone to challenge me or try to throw me out again. A few of the diviners leave, but most stay, hungry for more. I unclench the scroll and hold it up so they can see its ancient script. A diviner leans in to touch it and yelps when a burst of air shoots from his hands. The accidental display gives me all the proof I need.
There's a sacred ritual. one that will restore your connection to the gods. If my friends and I don't complete it during the centennial solstice in 2 days, magic will disappear forever.
And my father will run through the streets, slaughtering your people again. He will stab you in the heart. He'll kill you like he killed my friend.
I look around the room, locking eyes with each diviner.
There is more than your magic at risk. Your very survival is on the line.
The mutters continue until someone from the crowd shouts,
"What do we have to do?"
I step forward, resheathing my blade and lifting my chin.
"There is a girl trapped in the guard fortress outside Gombe. She is the key. I need your magic to get her out. If you save her, you save yourselves."
The room remains silent for a long moment. Everyone stands still, but Kenyon leans back, crossing his arms with an expression I can't discern.
"Even if we wanted to help, whatever magic that scroll gave us wouldn't be strong enough."
"Do not worry."
I reach into Zeli's leather pack and pull out the sunstone. "If you agree to help, I will take care of that."
Chapter 66. Inan.
Zeli's screams haunt me long after they end. Shrill. Piercing. Though her broken consciousness rests in the dreamscape, my physical connection to her body remains. Echoes of her anguish burn my skin. At times the ache is so severe it hurts to draw breath. I fight to mask the pain as I knock on Father's door. Magic or not, I have to save her. I've already failed Zeli once. I'll never forgive myself if I allow her to perish here.
"Enter."
I open the door and push my magic down, stepping into the commander quarters that Father's commandeered. He stands in his velvet night robes, scanning a faded map. No sign of hatred. Not even a hint of disgust. For him, carving maggot into a girl's back is just another day's work. "You wanted to see me?" Father chooses not to answer for a long moment. He picks up the map and holds it to the light. A red X marks the Diviner Valley. In that instant, it hits me. Zuleika's death. Zeli's screams. They don't mean a thing to him. Because they're magi, they're nothing. He preaches duty before self, but his Orisha doesn't include them. It never has. He doesn't just want to erase magic. He wants to erase them.
"You disgraced me," he finally speaks. "There's no way to conduct yourself during an interrogation."
"I wouldn't call that an interrogation." Father sets the map down.
"Excuse me?"
Nothing. That's what he expects me to say. But Zeli sobs and shakes in the corners of my mind. I won't call torture by another name. "I didn't learn anything of use, Father. Did you?" My voice crescendos. "The only information I received was how loud you can make a girl scream." To my surprise, Father smiles, but his smile is more dangerous than his fury.
"Your travels have fortified you,"
he nods.
"Good. But do not waste your energy defending that maggot."
I know long before the slur leaves Father's lips. It's how he sees them all. How he would see me. I shift, moving until I can check my reflection in the mirror. Once again, the streak is covered under a coat of black dye. But skies only know how long that'll stay.
"We are not the first to bear this burden. To go to these lengths to keep our kingdom safe.
The Bretonians, the Poltogenes, all crushed because they didn't fight magic hard enough. You would have me spare the maggot and allow Orisha to suffer the same fate?
That is not what I proposed, but
a maggot like that is like a wild rider.
Father continues,
it won't just give you answers. You have to break its will. Demonstrate a new command.
He turns his gaze back to the parchment. He marks another X over Ilorin.
You'd understand that if you'd had the disposition to stay. By the end, the maggot told me everything I needed to know.
A bead of sweat runs down my back. I clench my fists.
Everything?
Father nods.
The scroll can only be destroyed with magic. I suspected this much after Admiral Ibele's failure. But the girl confirmed it. With her in our grasp, we finally have everything we need. Once we retrieve the scroll, we'll have her do the deed.
My heartbeat pulses into my throat. I have to close my eyes to keep calm.
So she'll live. For now.
Father runs his finger over the X marking the Diviner Valley. The red ink runs thick, dripping like blood.
Perhaps it's for the best.
He sighs.
She killed Kaya. A quick death would be a gift.
My body goes rigid. I blink hard. Too hard.
What?
I stammer. She said that? I struggle to say more. But every word dries in my throat. Kaya's hatred flashes back into my eyes. Maggot.
She confessed to being at the temple.
Father speaks as if the answer was obvious.
That's where they recovered Kaya's body.
He picks up a small turquoise crystal, stained with blood. My stomach twists as he holds it up to the light.
What's that? I ask, though I already know the answer. Some kind of residue.
Father's lips curl.
The maggot left these in Kaya's hair.
Father crushes the remnant of my magic until it crumbles into dust. As it breaks, the smell of iron and wine hits me. The scent of Kaya's soul.
When you find your sister, end her.
Father speaks more to himself than to me.
There's no shortage of people I would eradicate to keep you both safe. But I cannot forgive her for whatever role she played in Kaya's demise.
I grip the hilt of the sword and force a nod. I can almost feel the knife carving traitor into my back.
I'm sorry. I know.
She was your son. I know how much she meant to you. Father twists his ring, lost in his emotions.
She didn't want to go. She feared something like this would happen.
I think she feared disappointing you more than her own death. We all do. We always have. No one more than me.
What will you do with her?
I ask.
With who? Zaylee.
Father blinks at me. He's forgotten she has a name.
The physician is tending to her now. We believe her brother has the scroll. Tomorrow we'll use her as leverage to retrieve it. After it's in our hands, she'll destroy it for good.
And after that, I press, after it's gone, what then?
She dies.
Father turns back to his map, charting a course.
We'll parade her corpse around Orisha. Remind everyone what happens if they defy us. If there's even a whiff of rebellion, we'll wipe them all out, then and there.
What if there's another way? I speak up. I glance at the cities on the map. What if we could hear their complaints? Use the girl as an ambassador. There are people she loves. We could use them to keep her in line. A magi we control. Each word feels like a betrayal, but when Father doesn't interrupt, I keep going. I don't have a choice. I have to save her at all costs. I've seen things on these travels, Father. I understand the diviners now. If we can improve their situation, we'll quell the possibility of rebellions altogether.
My father thought the same thing.
I suck in a quick breath. Father never speaks of his family. The little I know about them comes from gossip and whispers around the palace.
He thought we could end their oppression, build a better kingdom. I thought so too. But then they killed him. Him and every other person I loved.
Father places a cold hand on my neck.
Believe me when I say there's no other way. You saw what that banner did to their camp.
I nod, although I wish I hadn't. There's no fighting, Father, now that I've seen humans incinerated so fast they couldn't even scream. Father's grip tightens, almost to the point of pain.
Heed my word and learn this lesson now, before it's too late.
Father steps forward and embraces me. A touch so foreign, my body flinches in shock. The last time his arms were wrapped around me was when I was young, after I cut Amari.
A man who can cut his own sister is a man who can be a great king.
For a second, I allowed myself to feel proud. I was happy as my sister bled.
I didn't believe in you,
he pulls back.
I didn't think you would succeed. But you've kept Orisha safe. All of this will make you a great king.
Unable to speak, I nod. Father turns back to his maps. He's done with me now, with nothing more to say. I leave the room.
Feel, I command myself. Feel something. Father's given me everything I've ever wanted. After all this time, he finally believes I will be a great king. But when the door slams shut, my legs buckle. I slide to the ground, with Zaylee locked in chains. It doesn't mean a thing.
Chapter 67 Inan. I wait till Father slumbers, until the guards leave their post. I sit in the shadows, watching. The iron door moans when the physician exits her cell. His face is blanched with strain, his clothes stained with her blood. The sight of him fortifies my desires. Find her. Save her. I zip across the floor and slide in my key. As the door groans open, I brace myself for the sight. Nothing can prepare me. Zaylee hangs limp, her body nearly lifeless, her torn dress soaked through with blood. The sight rips a new hole inside of me, and Father thinks the Magi are the animals. Shame and rage thrash within me as I select the right key. This isn't about magic. For once, it has to be about her. I unlock the shackles binding her wrists and ankles, freeing Zaylee from their hold. I catch her in my arms and cover her mouth. As she wakes, I muffle the sound of her screams. Her pain ripples through me. Already the physician's stitches are splitting. Her blood seeps out.
I can't feel it.
She whimpers against my skin. I adjust my arms to put pressure on the bandages around her back. You will. I try to soothe her. What in Sky's name does she mean? Her mind is a wall, running her torture on a constant loop. There's no ocean, no spirit, no scent of the sea. I can't see beyond the anguish. She lives in the prison of her pain.
Don't do this.
Her nails claw into my shoulder as we ascend an empty stairwell. I'm already bleeding out. Just leave me. The heat of her blood leaks through my fingers. I press harder against her back. We'll find a healer. Guards' boots clank around the corner. I duck into an empty room as I wait for them to pass by. She cringes and fights back a scream. I press her even tighter to my chest. When the corridor clears, I ascend another set of stairs. My heart pounds with every step.
"They'll kill you," she whispers as I run. "He'll kill you."
I steel myself against her words. I can't think about that now. All that matters is this. I need to get Zaylee out. The shouts ring first. The heat comes next. We crash to the ground as a blast from above shatters through the fortress wall.
Chapter 68. Amari. The fortress towers over Gombe's horizon like an iron palace, casting its shadow through the night. Troops man every corner, leaving no meter unprotected for more than a few moments. My heart beats in my throat as we wait for the guards patrolling the southern wall to pass. 30 seconds is all we shall have. I pray to the gods above that 30 seconds is all we need.
"Can you do this?" I whisper to Femi, stepping away from the overgrown Kenkiliba bushes granting us cover. Since touching the sunstone, his hands do not remain still, running over his fingers, his beard, his crooked nose.
"I'm ready," he nods. "It's hard to explain, but I can feel it."
"All right." I turn my attention back to the patrol. "Next time they pass, we go." The instant the guards round the corner, Femi and I dash across the manicured wild grass. Zane, Kenyon, and Imani follow fast behind, sticking to the shadows to avoid being spotted by those above. Though many diviners from the Toju agreed to help, only Kenyon and his team were willing to touch the scroll and awaken their magic. I hoped they would be enough to take the fortress down, but not even all five of them could fight. Kani turned out to be a healer, and Ife awakened his powers as a tamer. Without magic that could strike quickly, it wasn't safe for them to enter. Thankfully, Kenyon turned out to be a burner, Femi a welder, Imani a cancer. Not the Magi army I had hoped for, but with the Sunstone Surge, they could be the only soldiers we need.
15 seconds, I hiss, panting as we reach the southern wall.
Femi places his hands against the cold iron, moving over the grooves and plates with the grace of an enlightened welder. He feels around for something I can't see, painfully slow, as our time aches by.
10 seconds.
Femi closes his eyes and presses harder into the metal wall. My chest clenches as time ticks away.
5 seconds.
Suddenly the air tightens. A green light glows in Femi's hand. The metal wall ripples open like water. We all rush through the emerging tear, sneaking into the fortress as quickly as we can. Hard footsteps pound outside just as Femi slips in. He manages to close up the wall moments before the next patrol marches past.
Thank the skies.
I let out a long, slow breath, savoring the small victory before the next battle commences. We are in. But now the hard part begins. Polished swords adorn the walls around us, reflecting our anxious faces. This must be the armory. If this fortress's structure mirrors the one in Lagos, we must be near the commander quarters on the upper level. That means the prison cells have to be below. The door handle twists. I hold up a hand, signaling everyone to duck out of sight as the armory door groans open. I hear the sounds of a guard approaching and catch his reflection in the glinting swords as he enters. I watch the guard, waiting, counting each step he takes. He's close. One more step and we can...
Go!
I hiss. Zane and Kenyon strike, tackling the guard to the ground. As they shove a rag into his mouth, I run and close the door before any sound leaks out. By the time I return, the soldier's screams are muffled. I crouch down and release my blade, pressing the cold metal into his neck. Scream, and I'll slit your throat. The venom in my words surprises me. I've only heard this poison in father's voice, but it does the trick. The soldier swallows hard as I rip the gag from his mouth. The Magi prisoner, I bark. Where is she?
The what?
Zane whips out his axe and holds it above the guard's head, daring him to feign ignorance again.
The cell is at the base, down all the stairs, the farthest one to the right.
Femi kicks the guard in the forehead, knocking him out cold. The guard hits the floor with a heavy thud as we run toward the door.
Now what? Zane asks me.
We wait.
For how long?
I study the hourglass timepiece hanging around Kenyon's neck, reading the grains as they fall past the quarter mark. Where is the second wave? They should have already hit. A blast thunders and booms, reverberating through the iron under our feet. We press against the wall as the fortress quakes, shielding our heads from the swords that rain from the walls. More blasts ring from outside, followed by the yells of running guards. I open the door a crack, watching soldiers fly by. They sprint toward a fight I pray they'll never find. The diviners who weren't willing to awaken their powers agreed to fight from afar. Using the bar's alcohol, we managed to make nearly 50 firebombs, building while others constructed the slingshots they would use to launch the explosives. With the distance, the diviners should be able to strike and flee on their riders before the guards get close. And while the guards are distracted, we'll make our escape. We wait till the thundering footsteps are silenced before fleeing the armory and heading down the stairwell in the center of the fortress. We sprint down flight after flight of stairs, descending the floors of the iron tower. Just a few more levels until we can set Zaylee free. We shall head straight for the sacred island. With 2 days left, we'll make it just in time for the ritual. But as we descend another stairwell, a group of soldiers blocks our path. When they raise their blades to strike, I have no choice but to scream. Attack! Kenyon strikes first, sending a prickle of fear through my skin as his heat warms the air. A powerful red glow swirls around his fist. With a punch, a stream of flame erupts, knocking 3 guards into the wall. Femi lunges forward next, using his metal magic to liquefy the blades of the guards' swords. As they skid to a halt, Imani steps forward, our cancer, perhaps the most terrifying one of all. She leaks dark green energy from her hands, trapping the men in a malignant cloud. The moment it touches the guards, they crumble, skin yellowing as disease rages through them. Although more guards filter in, the Magi's powers flourish, unlocked with threatening strength. They run on raw instinct, fueled by the unbreakable swell of the Sunstone's surge.
Let's go, I say.
Zane takes advantage of the hysteria, pressing against the walls to slip through the battle. I follow his lead and join him on the other side, racing down another stairwell to rescue Zaylee. With this power, no one can stop us. Not one soldier will stand in our way. We can defeat the army. We can even face... Father? The guards flank Father on all sides, shielding him from attack while he runs along the upper level. As he surveys the uproar, his dark brown eyes find mine, zeroing in like a hunter targeting his prey. He stumbles in shock, but only for an instant. As my involvement in the attack sinks in, Father's rage breaks free.
Amari!
His glare freezes my blood, but this time I have my sword. This time I'm not afraid to strike.
Be brave, Amari.
Binta's voice rings loud. The sight of her blood fills my head. I can avenge her now. I can cut father down. While the Magi take out the guards, my sword can free father of his head. Retribution for all his massacres, every poor soul he has ever killed.
Amari.
Zane pulls my attention, allowing father to disappear behind an iron door at the end of his hallway. A door Femi could easily melt.
What are you doing?
I blink at Zane and keep my mouth shut. There is no time to explain. One day, I shall fight father. Today, I must fight for Zaylee. Chapter 69. Inan.
I clutch Zaylee to my chest as another blast rings. The fortress shakes. Black smoke fills the air. Screams echo against the iron walls. Cries break through the charred door. I run into a chamber and look out the barred windows. Though flames blast the walls of the fortress, no enemy appears. Instead, troops scream as they catch fire. Pantheners run rabid in fear. It's a chaos unmatched, bringing back all the horrors of Kwame's blaze. Magi attack again. My soldiers fall as they rain.
No!
I run away from the window and look out the iron door as a mangled scream rings from the floor above me. Fire and metal and disease wage war, ravishing an endless stream of soldiers. The men who charge are incinerated by a banner's flames. Those who shoot arrows are struck by a welder. The bearded Magi reverses each arrowhead, sending the sharp metal straight through the shooter's armor. But worst of all is the freckled girl. A cancer. A harbinger of death. Dark green clouds of disease spew from her hands. With one breath, the soldiers' bodies seize. A slaughter. A slaughter. Not a fight. Only three Magi battle. Yet the soldiers crumble beneath their power. It's worse than the destruction of the Diviner camp. At least then the soldiers were the first to strike, but now their premature fear seems justified. Father was right. There's no denying it now. No matter what I desire, if magic returns, this is how my kingdom will burn.
Inan, Zaylee whimpers. Her warm blood leaks down my hands. The key to Orisha's future. Bleeding in my arms. The pull of duty weighs down my step, but I can't listen to it now. No matter what, Zaylee must live. I can find a way to stop magic after she's safe. I race through the empty hallway as the battle rages. I ascend another stairwell. Another blast rings. The fortress quakes, knocking me off the steps. I clutch Zaylee as we fall. This time she can't muffle her screams. I brace us against a wall when another blast hits. At this rate, Zaylee will bleed out before she escapes. Think. I close my eyes and press Zaylee's head against my neck. The schematics of the fortress run through my mind. I search for a way out. Between the guards and Magi and firebombs, there's no way we can escape, but we don't need to. They're coming for her. She doesn't need to get out. They need to get in. The cell, I rise. That has to be where they're headed. Zaylee screams as we rush down a stairwell. Her cries join the agony of the night. We're close, I whisper when we take the last corridor. Just hold on. They're coming. We'll get back to the cell. Then Zane will...
Amari? I don't recognize my sister at first. The Amari I know hides from her sword. This woman looks ready to kill. Amari sprints down the hallway toward us, with Zane following close behind. When a guard charges her with his blade outstretched, she's quick to slice him in the thigh. Zane follows up with a blow to the head that knocks the soldier out cold. Amari! I shout. She skids to a halt. When she spots Zaylee in my arms, her jaw drops. She and Zane rush to meet us. That's when they see all the blood. Amari's hand shoots to her mouth, but her horror is nothing compared to Zane's. A strangled noise escapes his lips, something between a whimper and a moan. He shrinks. It's strange to see someone his size appear so small. Zaylee peels her head from my neck.
Zane.
He drops his axe and races to her. As I hand Zaylee over, I see that the gauze pressed to her back runs red.
Zale.
Zane whispers. The loose bandages reveal the full extent of her wounds. I should have warned them. But nothing could prepare anyone for the bleeding maggot carved into Zaylee's back. The sight shatters my heart. I can only imagine what it does to Zane. He holds her. Too tight. But there's no time to criticize. Go, I urge them. Father's here. More guards will come. The longer you wait, the more impossible it'll be to escape.
Come with us?
The hope in Amari's voice cuts me. The thought of leaving Zaylee makes my chest tight. But this isn't my fight. I can't be on their side. Zaylee turns back to me. Fear floods her tear-stained eyes. I lay a hand on her forehead. Her skin scorches hot against my palm. I'll find you, I whisper.
But your father...
Another blast. The hall fills with smoke. Go! I shout as the fortress shakes. Get out while you still can! Zane rushes off, carrying Zaylee through the smoke-filled hysteria. Amari starts after him but hesitates.
I won't leave you behind.
Go, I press. Father doesn't know what I've done. If I stay behind, I can try to protect you from the inside. Amari nods and follows Zane, accepting my lie with her sword raised. I collapse into the wall as I watch them disappear up the stairwells, crushing the desire to follow. Their battle is won, their duty fulfilled. My fight to save Orisha has only begun. Chapter 70. Zaylee. Escaping the fortress is a blur, a painting of madness and pain. Through it all, my back rips open. With each tear, the agony burns raw. My vision goes black, but I know we've escaped when the heat of the fortress opens into the cool night air. It whips against the gashes carved into my skin as Nyla carries us to safety. All these people... All these magi come to save me. What will they do when they learn the truth? That I'm broken. Useless. Through the blackness, I try something, anything, to feel magic's rush. But no warmth runs through my veins. No surge erupts in my heart. All I feel is the searing slash of the soldier's knife. All I see are Saran's black eyes. I faint before my fears reach their full fruition, not knowing how much time has passed or where we've gone. When I wake from the haze, calloused hands wrap around my body and lift me from Nyla's saddle. Zane. I'll never forget the despair carved into his face when he saw me. The only time I've seen that look was after the raid, when he discovered Mama's body in chains. After everything he's done, I can't give him a reason to make that face again.
Hold on, Zane. Zane whispers. We are close.
He lays me down on my stomach, exposing the horrors of my back. The wounds draw a crowd of gasps. One boy begins to cry.
Just try, a girl coaxes. I've only done cuts, some bruises. This...
I spasm at the woman's touch, seizing up as the pain rips through my back. I can't.
Damn it, Connie, Zane cries. Do something before she bleeds out.
It's all right, Amari soothes. Here, touch the stone. Once again I flinch as the woman's hands press down, but this time they are warm, heating me like the tidal pools surrounding Ilorin. The warmth travels through my body, soothing the pain and aches. As it weaves under my skin, I get my first breath of relief. With it, my body jumps, snatching the chance for sleep. The soft earth flattens beneath my feet, and I instantly know where I am. The reeds brush against my bare legs as the roar of rushing water falls nearby. On another day, the falls would beckon me closer. Today they sound wrong, sharp, like my screams.
Zaylee?
Inan comes into view, eyes wide with worry. He takes a step forward but stops, like if he gets any closer, I'll shatter. I want to crack, crumble into the dirt and cry. But more than anything, I don't want him to know how his father's broken me. Tears well in Inan's eyes and he shifts his gaze to the ground. My toes curl into the soft earth as I follow his lead. I'm sorry, he apologizes. I don't think he'll ever stop. I know I should let you rest, but I had to see if you were okay, I finish for him, though I know why he doesn't speak the word. After everything that's happened, I don't know if I'm capable of feeling okay again. Did you find a healer? He asks. I shrug. Yes. I'm healed. Here in our dreamscape, the world's hatred isn't carved into my back. I can pretend my magic still flows through my veins. I don't struggle to speak, to feel, to breathe. In that instant, I see a face that cuts like another scar in my back. Since the day I met Inan, I've seen so much in his amber eyes. Hatred, fear, remorse. I've seen everything. Everything. But never this. Never pity. No. Fury grips me. I won't let Saran take this too. I want the eyes that stared at me like I was the only girl in Orisha. The eyes that told me we could change the world. Not the eyes that see I'm broken. That I'll never be whole again. Zale. He stops when I pull his face to mine. With his touch, I can push away the pain. With his kiss, I can be the girl from the festival. The girl who doesn't have maggot etched into her back. I pull away. Inan's eyes stay closed like they did after our first kiss. Except this time, he winces. As if our kiss causes him pain. Though our lips touch, the embrace isn't the same. He doesn't run his fingers through my hair, graze my lip with his thumb. His hands hang in the air, afraid to move, to feel. You can't touch me, I whisper, fighting to keep my voice from cracking. The lines in his forehead crease. Zale, you don't want this. I pull his lips to mine again, and he breathes in, muscles softening under my kiss. When we pull apart, I press my forehead to his nose. You don't know what I want. His eyes flutter open, and this time there's a glimmer of the look I crave. I see the boy who wants to take me back to his tent, the gaze that lets me pretend we could be okay. His fingers brush against my lips, and I close my eyes, testing his restraint. His knuckles graze my chin and Saran's grip jerks my chin back to his face with violent force. My whole body flinches. The calm in his eyes explodes with rage as my breath withers in my throat.
It takes everything in me not to cry out, to swallow my terror as his nails draw blood from my skin.
You would do well to answer me, child.
Zale? My nails dig into Inan's neck. I need the grip to stop my hands from shaking. I need it to keep from crying out.
Zale, what's wrong?
Concern creeps back into his voice, like a spider crawling across the grass. The look I need is falling apart. Just like me.
Zale!
I kiss him with so much force it breaks through his hesitation, his contempt, his shame. Tears fall from my eyes as I press into his touch, desperate to feel the way we felt before. He pulls me close, fighting to be tender, yet holding me tight. It's like he knows that if he lets go, it's over. There's no denying what awaits us on the other side. A gasp catches in my throat as his hands clutch my back, grip the slope of my thighs. Each kiss takes me to a new place. Each stroke pulls me from the pain. His hands slide up my back, and I wrap my legs around his waist, following his silent command. He lowers me onto a bed of reeds, laying me down with a gentle ease.
Zale,
Inan breathes. We're moving fast, too fast, but we can't slow down. Because when the dream ends, it's over. Reality will hit, sharp and cruel and unforgiving. I'll never be able to look at Inan's face without seeing Saran's again. So we kiss and we clutch each other until it all goes away. Everything fades, every scar, every ache. In this instant, I only exist in his arms. I live in the peace of his embrace. Inan pulls away, pain and love swirling behind his amber eyes. Something else, something harder. Maybe a goodbye. It's then I realize that I want this. After everything, I need this. Keep going, I whisper, making Inan's breath hitch. His eyes drink in my body, yet I can still feel his restraint.
Are you sure?
I pull his lips to mine, silencing him with a slow kiss. I want this, I nod. I need you. I close my eyes as he draws me close, letting his touch drown out the pain, even if it's only for a moment.